and welcome to the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. Today we continue our series on Intel's vPro technologies. We're joined once again by Eric Chong, Enterprise Client Technical Sales Specialist at Intel, to dive deep into what is probably the most important aspect of the vPro platform for MSPs, active management technology. AMT was one of the first pillars of vPro to emerge, and its aim is to bring remote capabilities that MSPs are used to having on servers and in their client software, and baking it right into the hardware of client devices. This was important a decade and a half ago when AMT first launched, and in today's world of people working from home or wherever they may be on any given day, the kind of remote manageability is even more important today. Chong walks us through a quick reminder of what vPro is and how AMT works. We talk about what it brings to the table and some common use cases. And importantly for MSPs, we detail the ways the technology helps reduce truck rolls. And I do know how y'all hate truck rolls. We talk about what you need to do to get the most out of AMT, how it works in a multi-tenant environment for MSPs, and how it scales both up and down the client side. We discuss how MSPs and the tools they use have embraced AMT, the kind of professional services MSPs can bring in behind AMT, and what Intel is doing to build awareness and ease of use around the technology. It's a great conversation, so let's get right into it. My chat with Eric Chong of Intel. Eric, thanks for taking the time. Good to chat with you again.
Great. Thanks for having me, Rob.
We kind of covered the basics of what is vPro last time. This time wanted to drill down on an area that is probably one of the more interesting spaces of there for MSPs with active management technology. Before we get into that side of things, can you maybe give us the for those who didn't listen to the first podcast or who maybe coming at this after a little bit away, can you kind of give us the elevator pitch for what vPro is and sort of how it fits into the platform?
Sure. Yeah. So vPro, when I use the term vPro, I talk about vPro as a platform because there's a misconception in the marketplace in terms of what vPro is. So for in OEM to put the vPro badge on that machine, there's really certain ingredients that they have in place. Namely, they have to have a vPro CPU, vPro chipset, vPro enabled network connectivity, wireless and/or Ethernet, and firmware that ties it all together. And once they get that vPro badge based on those ingredients, there's four main pillars that are really what we call best for business. One is security. Another is stability. Another one is performance. And lastly, there's manageability. The manageability piece, I think historically has been synonymous with vPro. vPro is active management technology, which is the subset of vPro. Well, a lot of people think that active management technology is vPro, but there really is much more to it. But for today's conversation, we'll be talking specifically about the manageability aspect or active management technology.
Well, and am I correct in remembering that AMT was sort of the first component of vPro to kind of hit market, or the sort of one that got the brightest spotlight with the initial launch?
Yeah, you have a great memory. So, in fact, the vPro brand has been around for 15 years, but before the vPro brand, we actually had, or Intel had, active management technology in the marketplace as version 1.0. And that got rolled into the vPro brand when it became available. So you're absolutely correct. It was actually available before the official vPro branding, but a lot of people, think that is vPro equates active management technology. It's much, much more.
Gotcha. All right. So the name is fairly self-explanatory when you're talking about active management technology, but can you walk us through, what AMT is and what it does today?
Yeah, AMT, the best analogy I can probably give you, and I'll probably try to get more focused on this, is if you think of a server, when you actually, a rack server, for example, that's in a data center, you don't actually go to that server to do any type of maintenance on it or access it. It's all done remotely through, various lights out card, iDRAC, ILO, et cetera. Think of AMT the same way. So it provides out-of-band management access to a client PC. So the ability to get to that machine, power it on remotely, power it off remotely, restart it remotely, even hardware KVM into that machine as if you're, in front of that machine typing away. So one of the things we looked at is machines became more dispersed. And how do you actually manage machines when something really goes, let's call it off the rails? The OS is down. How do you get to that machine? And active management technology is technology that is built upon DASH standards, which is an industry standard. And Intel is part of the committee that actually designs those standards. It's really a superset of what we call DASH. And it's been in the marketplace, as I mentioned, for about 15 years or so, and a lot of reiterations. But the main piece of it is the ability to manage machines very effectively, namely out of band, namely even if the operating system is not available to get to that particular PC.
So, bringing some of that sort of technology that a lot of solution providers will be used to seeing in data center technology and bringing it out to endpoint technology. Obviously, that has a potentially pretty big impact. It's in a world where a lot of folks are working from home. But can you share sort of some of the common use threads for AMT and situations where it comes in particularly handy?
Sure. It's actually, believe it or not, it's in every life. We see it everywhere. So the most common scenario we would think is now working from home. Mm-hmm. A person's PC is actually at home because a lot of people are working from home. And how do you actually remotely manage that machine effectively? Yes, when the operating system is up and running, you can get to that machine, do all the things you normally would do as if you're in the office. But when it's down, how do you ensure that machine is turned on so you can patch it? AMT comes into practice there, comes into big play. If someone needs support getting their VPN up and running, even though it's internet connected, they can't get the VPN working, how do you help with that? We can actually do that with the actual active management technology as well, because everything happens outside the operating system. Now, that's one example in terms of IT, but you know, for example, every day in life, when you actually go buy something, many of the cash registers, for example, are actually AMT activated. So when things go down in a retail environment, there's no IT staff there. How often do you go to a retail environment, see an IT guy walk around? Very, very seldomly. So a lot of the actual point of sale devices are actually AMT activated. Similarly, you know, if you go to the bank and you put your money into the ATM, guess what? A lot of times that ATM is AMT activator, active management technology activator, because again, how do you actually maintain the uptime? And then, in, you know, speaking about retail as well, digital signage is another big one. How do you actually ensure that digital sign is up? And if it's up, how do you ensure it keeps on running? So a lot of times that PC, for example, running that digital signage is not somewhere that's very accessible. Maybe in a closet, maybe behind the actual 40-inch monitor, you know, 8 feet up on the wall. You know, you're not going to have an employee try to press a button, reset it. All that can be done remotely. So in the retail environment, that's a very, you know, common use case scenario. Well, I'll use another one, you know, more on the public sector is schools. Mm-hmm. So the active management technology, you know, I worked on one, what we call them activations, the ability to turn on AMT. There's a school in my home province, and they're in Northern Ontario, and they're very remote. The schools are approximately 4 to 8 hours apart from each other. And again, very little IT staff. So they use this technology to actually remote into those machines to turn them on, power them on, reset them, even reimage them if they need to. So because you're not going to send in, you know, one of the two or three IT techs to drive 8 hours for something that may take 10, 15 minutes. It just doesn't make sense. So they eliminate all the truck rolls and, more important, the time, both employee time, the time to get to that particular PC to fix it. In higher ed, you know, in terms of, again, education, we have a lot of universities that have this technology turned on for different scenarios. So one is kind of the usual IT scenario I talked about earlier for, you know, professors, PCs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But another very common scenario is a lot of the actual classrooms have PCs that professors actually, they don't bring their own PC, but they actually have a desktop, for example, or notebook in the actual classroom. They actually turn them on remotely before the school day starts or university day starts so that they can ensure it's up and running, everything's, you know, running. And that the machine is actually patched, because the last thing you want is, you know, you run into your class, turn on your machine, it says Windows update, you know, and you have to wait 10, 15 minutes and it's not a good use of time. So that's one use case scenario. Another big one that we see in universities is lab machines, the ability to turn on all the lab machines at one time and then turn them off as well at night from power savings perspective. So, and one kind of unique use case scenario that I find, it's not really active management technology, but is part of the tool set that we offer. One of my colleagues actually in Japan, what they do is the tool set, which I'll talk about later, is called Endpoint Management Assistant. You can actually view all your students' screens. So with remote learning or even in-class learning, all the screens should look like the same because they should be on the same lesson plan. But if one screen looks different, they're on Facebook or whatever, not right. So the teacher can actually either message that student directly through the tool set or say, hey, hey, Rob, why are you on Facebook and not on lesson plan, you know, 3? So those are some examples in terms of schools. And I think, you know, our audience is probably more SMB. Going into the retail scenario, you know, I mentioned a lot of large companies have these on point of sale, but we actually have a case study on our website where even a very small hardware store is using this this technology to actually manage their small number of PCs in their hardware store. So wide ranging use case scenarios right across the board.
I can believe that, because I remember back to the launch time and kind of hearing the vision and what was available at the time. I know it has obviously expanded since then, but yeah, one of the thoughts that really struck me was this fits in so nicely with what MSPs do in terms of being the IT department for small businesses that don't have IT on staff. And you know, you mentioned eliminating truck rolls, and one of the first lessons an MSP taught me about being an MSP is that truck rolls are the enemy of profitability. Anything that you can do remotely, you should do remotely, and this obviously expands the footprint of that. But can you share a little bit, sort of the expand maybe upon that and upon the value prop for MSPs with using AMT enabled systems and kind of getting the most out of that?
Yeah, the big one is truck roll. So it's really effective management. You know, a lot of the MSPs, they have tool sets. You know, they are in the marketplace. We all know what they are. And they're very, very good at managing things while the machine is turned on. But in the scenarios where the machine's not turned on, what's the value? The tools have, I shouldn't say zero value, but for the most part, they have zero value in terms of managing at that point in time if you want to do something in real time. So with active management technology, what we call turned on or activated, they now have the ability to actually manage that machine at any state. So they can actually power it on, make sure the patches are on that particular machine. If something goes wrong with that particular machine, they can see it through their console in real time. So let's say, for example, again, eliminating their truck, or let's say, you know, God forbid that, you know, an end user gets a blue screen and they have a 20-digit code. Rather than having that, you know, user try to read this 20-digit code where they get the zeros and O's messed up, the S's and five, you know, mixed up on this very small, you know, 10-point font, the MSP can actually see that in real time because everything's happening outside the operating system. And they can screenshot that and say, oh, yeah, I know what this error code means. It means, you know, X, Y, Z, I need to take this action. So it really, you know, helps them maximize the user's uptime. And again, eliminate that truck roll. So I'll give you another example that, you know, is, I believe, is applicable to MSPs as well. It's the accessibility of that particular device. So in the scenario I used earlier with the digital signage, the device is not even really accessible. That could be the same case with, you know, other devices. So for example, I work with a law firm in the US and they have rack workstations in a data center. Mm-hmm. And they have them globally across their offices in Hong Kong and in New York and London. And no one's there to get actually into that room, even though it's not a server per se, it's actually a workstation. And what happens is their users remote into their workstation through a one-to-one session. How do you actually manage that machine when you can't get into that room? And again, use the active management technology to help with that, because it's not just the ability to resolve things quickly, but just sometimes machines aren't just accessible to the MSP. Even if they want to truck roll, it's not possible. So how do you get around that?
All right. You touched a few times on activating it. What's required to make this magic happen? You know, what's sort of the infrastructure or requirements, as well as obviously having a vPro platform system at the end user, but what else is required to make this all accessible, usable, something that one can take advantage of?
Yes. Okay. So with vPro, with the vPro sticker or the vPro platform branded, part of the specification that Intel sets out is that that device has to be ready to be activated or AMT turned on. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that if you buy a vPro machine today, Rob, I can just go and start hacking your machine. It doesn't work that way. The process of activation really provides that secure mechanism so that specific vPro endpoint knows which particular server it can talk to with the proper credentials. So that's what we call activating. So the good news is that the vPro machines, you know, when MSPs or their customers buy them, they're ready to be activated. Now, the process of activating it, you know, can be in different steps depending on the tool set, but I'll just give you the example of the tool set that Intel provides. You know, I provide a complimentary. It's called Endpoint Management Assistant, or EMA for short. Mm-hmm. available for download. It doesn't cost anything, but you do have to install it. So very high level, you would need to install this Emma server software on a Microsoft server OS, and it does require a SQL database. So very high level, you install it somewhere, and it could be either in the cloud, in the DMZ, or on-prem. All the communications from that server to the endpoint take place over port 8080, and it's all encrypted. So, you know, it's not like, you know, we can hack into traffic. It's all encrypted. Mm-hmm. And depending where it's installed, again, if it's on-prem, you can manage machines obviously on-prem. But if you want to actually manage machines outside of the firewall, you would have to open up port 8080 through a forward-facing IP address. We can get into more details on that, but essentially you have to open up the ports to allow to talk through. So you do need the Emma server that's available at no cost. And the great thing is that the MSPs can actually host this if they want, because a small business may not have the infrastructure to, or even have any servers or any pieces in place, and the MSP can host it. So the first thing is you need the M installed, whether it's actually in the cloud, in the DMZ, or on-prem. The second process is that there's really two small files, they're less than 5 megs together, that basically tell the actual endpoint, you know, that get run on the endpoint, and then tell the endpoint which server can I actually securely communicate to. So let's say, for example, we set up a server called emma.channelbuzz.ca. At that point in time, that endpoint knows it can only talk to that server securely.
Right.
And that server communicates with that endpoint, both in band and out of band. So one of the great things about the software that Intel provides is it does it both in band and out of band. So if you have machines that are not vPro, you can still manage those machines in band with the tool set. So you have that kind of one pane of glass. So the activation process, what happens is you run these two files on the machine. It registers that endpoint, registers itself with the server. At that point in time, you're pretty much done. That machine will determine, you know, the software will determine if it's AMT capable. If it is, it'll provision it as well. And then you can do all the magic that, that I discussed earlier in terms of remote power on, hardware KVM, et cetera. It's quite an easy process, you know, compared to what we've done in yesteryear.
All right. So yeah, it's just a matter of having that that little bit of the server software. And then that would be sort of one instance that I as an MSP would run that covers all of my clients, all of my customers and their client machines, correct?
Yeah, you bring up a good point. So depending on how you want to scale it, yes, you can have the one Emma server, and within each Emma server, you can actually break it down based on tenant. So for example, let's use your example of you're an MSP. I have an Emma server called emma.channelbuzz.ca. I can have company A with their own tenant and company B with a separate tenant, company C with their own tenant. So they're actually in their own sandbox area. They don't talk to each other. So you can actually separate that, which is good. So you can use that one infrastructure to manage multiple customers. But even within that tenant, let's say, for example, we have Acme Company A, we can even break it down into subgroups. So we can have one for HR, for sales, for you know, service. So we can even have subgroups based on that. And you can, you know, set the criteria whether you want it fully managed by the MSP. In other words, you have access to all those groups, or even within themselves, they can actually determine what kind of rights they have to access to which machines if they want to, you know, be kind of self-managed versus having the MSP managed. So there's a lot of flexibility, what I'm trying to say in terms of how you want to carve out the actual spaces. And each MS server, it's highly scalable. And, you know, without getting into much detail, one server can handle up to 20,000 clients. But if you do a multi-server, what we call a distributed installation, we've done installs of up to 300,000 plus clients. So it is highly scalable. From my personal experience, I think the smallest install we've done is maybe 20 clients, where the actual customer decided to host it themselves, but they found it enough value to even put that server up for 20 clients. But again, it's highly scalable from, you know, one to over 300,000 real world that we've done.
As I said, when the idea was first introduced, and it was actually right around the time that more and more solution providers were looking at ways of moving into that recurring revenue managed services kind of model, whether that was, you know, deep dive on professional services or more keeping the old, I will manage your infrastructure message, but just automating and making it a more predictable cost and expense basis. It's the kind of thing that I think makes the kind of sense that does. How's pickup been with the MSP community?
It's been good. I mean, it's slow, but it's been good. So a lot of the actual tools the MSP use, like the ConnectWise, Kaseya's, already have something built in to manage, to turn on active management technology. And a lot of them, what they're doing now, rather than building that engine, which is a lot of it historically is based on our old tool set called Setup and Configuration Software, SCS for short. A lot of them now are either doing two things. We're usually putting a linkage into our new software called the Endpoint Management System. The big difference with the Endpoint Management System is it allows you to manage machines outside the firewall. So now, you know, if the MSPs are managing machines for a company A, and that user is working from home, they can still get to that machine without VPN, any type of scenario. As long as that user has internet connection, we're good to go. And port 8080 is open, which it normally is. But that's one way they can do it. The other way is there are actually providers out there that will host it for you. For example, I think Springsoft IQ is one of them. And so if they don't want to, if even if the MSP doesn't want to host it themselves, there are people that will host it for you. But I think the MSP host themselves provides, you know, just a bit more control depending on how many clients they have. In terms of other revenue as well, as I mentioned, you know, a lot of the clients, I normally deal with large enterprise, but a lot of the clients do install their own, you know, their own instance of the endpoint management system server in their environment. But one thing is, if the MSPs become proficient at it, and it is quite easy to install, they can provide professional services to actually install it on behalf of those SMB customers, because, you know, just because they have more know-how, because the MSPs, you know IT, they do it all the time, and they can assist with that. And I don't see why they wouldn't charge for those, for that, you know, professional consultation.
Okay. Any other sort of additional service opportunities or sort of untapped opportunities that you see there for MSPs around AMT today?
Yeah, the ones that come to mind are the ones I think we discussed. It's the services opportunities, reoccurring revenue if they're hosting it, the consulting services. The big one is really the uptime or minimizing the truck rolls.
All right. So you said it's doing well in the MSP space, but it sounds like it's sort of moving along maybe a little bit slower than I would have expected based on my initial thoughts on what it does and how it fits in. Can you touch on you know, sort of why it isn't more adopted today and sort of opportunities to get it out there and build more awareness of the MSP space?
Yeah, I think number one is awareness. The key is that a lot of people aren't familiar with the technology, even though it's been out there for a long period of time. And the other piece as well is historically, you know, large enterprises always buy vPro, whereas the SMB marketplace, you know, did not necessarily buy the vPro type devices, which that is changing, as I mentioned, I believe in our past podcast. But I think the big reason is if people are aware of it, it's the complexity of it. So in the old days, in our old tool set, you know, I'm not going to, you know, to try to sugarcoat this, but it was very complex to actually get up and running. And when they designed the new tool set, the endpoint management system, we took that feedback, and I actually know the architect that actually kind of spearheaded this. He's since retired from Intel. But one of the goals of the endpoint management system was to be able to actually get nothing, let's say, you know, no machines activated, to install the software, and getting machines activated, in other words, being ready to manage within a couple of hours. So let's say within 2 hours. And, you know, that's the best case scenario where, you know, all the prerequisites are met, et cetera. In the old days, that software, you know, I would say if you were lucky, maybe you would get it done in 8 hours, for example. And that's in a secure manner because you would need to, you know, set up, you know, TLS certificates, et cetera. All this stuff is taken care of now with our new software. So the big thing is the complexity has been taken out greatly. And we do a lot of PLCs for enterprise customers. And, you know, I can state once prerequisites are met, we've done, you know, full installations with machines activated in hour and a half. So that is possible. A lot of times what slows it down is kind of the, I would say the bureaucratic processes involved. The larger the organization you are, the more things need to be signed off, even for a PLC. And then the great thing with the SMB market is, you know, and I experienced this firsthand, there's a lot less of this. Things just get done. Usually it's one IT guy, one focal, and things just get done. And we move in and out fairly quickly. But for the large enterprises, there's a lot of, you know, sign-off required for different areas. And generally speaking, the infrastructure is much more complex. But going back to your question, why isn't it more adopted? It's awareness and the complexity. And the good news, I think, is the awareness is coming out, and the complexity has been, that issue has been solved for a few years now.
All right. So if I'm an MSP listening to this, I want to learn more. Maybe I want to just get a little bit more of an education on how AMT might fit with me. Or I've heard something in some of your examples and thought, well, you know, I have some customers who would be nice to be more easily remotely managed from the client point of view. Where can I go to learn more?
Yeah, there's a few spots. So Intel has, you know, just intel.com/AMT, which has a lot of great information. We actually have a site just for MSPs as well on the tool sets, and we'll assist with that as well. And I'm hoping what we can do is I'll provide it to you in a URL after our call, and maybe that can be included as part of the podcast. But that is another area which we have especially just for MSPs with active management technology and with the various tool sets that are out in the marketplace.
Yep, dear listener, that will definitely be in the show notes for this in your podcast player of choice or in the story on the site. You should be able to find that right now. Eric, thanks for taking the time to share the secrets of AMT, as it were, for the MSP space. And yeah, I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for your time, Rob.
So there you have it, everything you need to know about Intel's vPro AMT as a solution provider, courtesy of Eric Chong. I'd like to thank Eric for joining us for the podcast, thank Intel Canada for their continuing support of the site, and of course, thank you for listening today. The ChannelBuzz.ca podcast will be back on Thursday as we're joined by Toby Nangle of Field Effect to talk about managed security services and why they might be the most important opportunity for solution providers today. Between now and then, we would invite you to subscribe or follow the podcast in your podcast app of choice. You'll find us in all the major podcast engines. And if you should feel so inclined, please do feel free to leave us a rating and a quick review in your favorite podcast app. Until Thursday, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca. Stay safe out there, and I'll see you around the channel.